Leviticus 25, verse number 10 says, "Proclaim liberty throughout all the land and to all the inhabitants thereof." This is Pastor Wynn Greer from the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church in Vilas, North Carolina, and you're listening to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. We always take a moment and invite you to come out and visit with us at Mount Lebanon. We are located 1 mile up Baird's Creek Road, just off of Highway 105 South, just above the Willow Creek Golf Course. And we have our regular Sunday services, Sunday school, 10 a.m. for all ages, 11 a.m. our Sunday morning worship service. Every second and fourth Sunday night, we have our Sunday evening service at 6 p.m., and then every Wednesday night at 7, our midweek prayer and Bible study. So we'd love for you to come out if you're visiting in the area, or maybe you live here and you're looking for a church home. Lots of opportunities to visit with us. It's good to see Noah today. He's here helping us in the radio studio, and we appreciate all he does to help us on all the radio broadcast work. And how's your day so far?
It's going well. I'm happy to be here this morning, as always. I do want to say welcome to all those who listen in, those listening in right here on AM 1450, WATA, and 96.5 FM out of Boone, North Carolina. Those who listen in on AM 690, WZAP out of Bristol, Virginia, and 89.1 KPGT, The Truth out of Watertown, South Dakota.
We do appreciate all of our listeners, and if you are a regular listener, you know that we have been studying on the subject of education for several weeks now. In fact, 15 weeks we've been looking at this subject, and I have really learned a lot. It's helped me understand history. It's helped me understand the modern world in which we live. The study of history is just one of those things that's very interesting to me. In fact, when I was in school, that was one of my favorite subjects. Not that I remembered all of it, but I did enjoy it, and I still do. But we've been looking at education, just a very quick review today. We try to do this every week just as quickly as we can. But just in case you're a new listener, we've been studying on the subject of education, and we started out talking about education from colonial America. Actually, we started before that when the Pilgrims came over, but we've spent most of our time talking about the colonial period. Now we have moved into the era of modern education. And what we have been looking at especially is the subject of foundations. When we're talking about the foundations, the beginning of things, very, very important. Psalms 11 in verse 3 says, "If the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do?" And so when we think about our foundation or the beginning of something, that lets us know a lot of times why things are the way they are. Now, in the colonial time period, education was, number one, home controlled, meaning that mom and dad, pretty much, they were in charge of the education of their children. And they may do that at home. They may have a tutor. They may send their children to the one-room schoolhouse. Many times early on in America, the minister of the local church would also be the schoolmaster. And so the schoolhouse and the church house, they were literally many times in the same building. In fact, the church that I pastor today, Mount Lebanon Baptist Church, started in a little one-room schoolhouse. They called it the Bryan Schoolhouse, and that is where Mount Lebanon Baptist Church started. So it was a schoolhouse throughout the week, and then on Sunday, it was the church house. And so that was very, very common in our country once upon a time. It was home-controlled. Number two, it was God-centered. And so it was, they had morality. They had lessons about God, the Bible, specifically things like the Ten Commandments, and in the New Testament, the Beatitudes, the do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. It was God-centered. Moral lessons were always involved. And there was a high rate of literacy, meaning people could read, they could write, they could do arithmetic. Now, modern education has moved away from that. Modern education could be described today not as home-controlled, but as state-controlled, controlled by the government. It is man-centered, not God-centered, and there's a high rate of illiteracy. And what I mean by that, comparatively speaking, there's people that goes through school and they cannot read, they cannot write. They even sometimes get a diploma, and some go to college, and colleges now, today, have to offer rudimentary classes in, you know, how to write a paper, how to lay out paragraphs, just very basic things that should have been learned many years before one gets out of high school. The past couple of weeks, we've been focusing up on the 1800s, the time period of the 1800s. And the 1800s is a bridge from the colonial to the modern. The 1800s were very transformative years, and there were many new things that were introduced into the schools at that time. And for the most part, they were introduced at a university level. And then, of course, that filters down into the grade schools. This time period that we're talking about, nothing ever historically happens overnight. But we can sort of look back and we can see how we got to where we are today. So for many years, you know, you had this mixing of the way it was and the way they were trying to get it to be. You had the mixture of the home controlled versus the state controlled, and you had a mixture of being God-centered and then becoming more secular. Education, as time went on, became more and more secular and less moral and religious. Secular means this, pertaining to the present world, or to things not spiritual or holy. And so more and more, little by little, down through the years, you see moral lessons, you see religious lessons being taken out of the curriculum, being taken out of the school system. So education became more secular. There was an introduction first at the university level, and then it trickles on down. The introduction of socialism, communism, evolution was introduced in the 1800s. And even in our country, in America, up until the 1900s, and even today, there's huge controversy over the teaching of evolution versus the teaching of creation. But pretty much in your public school system, you're going to be taught evolution, not creation, or that there was a creator, where before they believed that there was a creator. So you have the introduction of evolution. And last week we mentioned this, the introduction of compulsory education. Now, compulsory education means this, that it became the law that children attend school. Compulsory education was introduced in 1852. Going to school became the law. And when education became compulsory, when it became a matter of breaking the law, then what you have as a natural result of that is that government took education over. It's from that time period that you have the introduction of the truant officer. Now, I don't ever remember there being a truant officer, but I remember people talking about it. Well, if you miss school, the truant officer will come and get you. And that's if you, the only memory I have of that was watching episodes of The Little Rascals, and the truant officer got after them because they were missing school. But there was such a thing as a truant officer. And so the government took over education, first on a state level and then on a federal level. Now, so far, we have looked at two key figures concerning education in America. Two key figures, two fathers, two founders in our country as far as education is concerned. The first one we looked at was Noah Webster. Noah Webster of the American Dictionary of the English Language, or it's referred to commonly as the Webster's 1828. But a Webster's Dictionary and all that come after that, well, we look back to the father of that, the founder of that, Noah Webster. And Noah Webster is called the father of American education and scholarship. Not only his dictionary, but his spellers, his readers. It's said that Noah Webster educated five generations of America. His lessons, his theme was moral and religious and reading and writing and civics. And he was a patriot and he was a dedicated Christian gentleman. And so Noah Webster, we looked at him. He's called the father of American education and scholarship. Now, the second person we looked at was John Dewey. John Dewey is called the father of progressive education. He does not come along till the last of the early 1900s. He was educated at Columbia University, and John Dewey was a humanist. He signed the first Humanist Manifesto that came out in 1933. He is called the father of progressive education. And so we looked at John Dewey. Now today we're going to look at another father, founder of education in our country. We're going to look at a gentleman named Horace Mann. Horace Mann is called the father of the common school movement. Sometimes the common school movement is called, referred to as factory schools. Horace Mann was born in 1848. He died March the 3rd, 1853. He was an American educational reformer. He was a member of the Massachusetts State Legislature from 1827 to 1837, and he was a member of the United States House of Representatives from Massachusetts, 1848 to 1853. And it was during the time period of Horace Mann that compulsory education laws were passed. In fact, the first laws were passed a year before he died in 1852. Now, we talked a great deal about the colonial time period through the influence of mainly Noah Webster. Education in America was what I called, and I don't even know if this is a real word, but it became Americanized, meaning not like Europe, not like Britain, not like France, not like Spain, Germany, Holland, any of the European countries that came to America. Education in America became unique, and it was unique for several reasons. I'm not going to go back over, but the frontier and the one room and the pioneers moving out west, there's a lot of things that made education in America unique and different from the way that it was in Europe. But Noah Webster was very, very instrumental in that. His dictionary standardized the American language. Noah Webster believed if we were going to be our own separate country, our own separate nation, we needed to utilize our own language. And we do that in America today. We use English. We speak American. We use the English language, but we speak American. And if you don't understand what I'm talking about, if you went to England or if you went to Scotland, you would find out quickly that you understood them, but there were some things that you did not understand. And some things do not make sense. They speak the King's English. We speak American. Now, here's something that's interesting that you can observe in the world today. Other countries that were colonized by Great Britain speak the King's English. And so you can go to many different countries in the world and you will think, well, they sound like they're from England. South Africa, places in the Caribbean islands, Australia. These countries and others were colonized by Great Britain and they speak the King's English. America was colonized by Great Britain, but we speak American. Why is that? Because we have our own unique language in America. And Noah Webster affected our language, our spelling, the words that we use, our view of government, civics, the study of the United States Constitution, and on and on and on. One of his favorite verses was Proverbs 22 and verse number 6, "Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it." But somewhere our Americanized education began to unravel, and we began to move more towards a European model. And in order to find out what happened in our country as far as our education was concerned, we need look no farther than Horace Mann. Horace Mann, key figure, father of the Common School movement. Other gentlemen were involved as well. Some of them, Mr. Calvin Stowe from Ohio. He was the husband of Harriet Beecher Stowe and the famous novelist. And Barna Sears of Connecticut. Some of these men visited in the early part of the 19th century. They visited the country of Prussia. Now, Prussia is modern-day Germany. And they went over there on a, what we might say, a field trip of sorts to observe how that they were educating their children. Now, the why and the how they got over there looking around, I don't know. But they visited Prussia. They were impressed with the order of their society, the people, the society. They were obedient. They were efficient. And they credited the school system for that. And when they came back to America, Horace Mann and these other men, they brought the Prussian vision to America. Now, the thing about it, Horace Mann, he was a member of the United States House of Representatives from Massachusetts, and he was appointed to oversee education. And he pretty much, and just a few others, single-handedly converted our country to a European model based on the Prussian school system. There was, and here's something interesting about that. There was no national debate. There was no discussion. It just happened. They just done it. And it was literally forced upon the people in America. I mean, they had no choice. And if you think that can't happen in government, like many other things they've done, they just done it. And that's what we have today. These few men are the reason why our public school systems are the way that they are today. Government does that sometimes. They just put things on us. Sort of like if you remember a few years ago, Obamacare. And remember how many thousands and thousands of pages. And some of them said, don't read it, just sign it. And you know, so that's what they did. And so here, that's what we've got. And now there's a national, controversy. We don't want it anymore. Or a lot of people don't want it anymore. Well, government just did it. And it affected all the rest of it. That is how our public education system that we're used to today came into being. The Prussian model became our new foundation. We already had a good system of education in this country. It wasn't perfect, and it would have evolved and changed with all the other changes that have come along. But this Prussian model became our model. Now, the Prussian model, I'm going to say some things about the Prussian model or the German model. It was not designed for the benefit of the child. The Prussian model of education was designed for the benefit of the state. And what I mean by that, they found that the earlier they could separate a child from its parents, the easier it was to make children conformed to the state and make them good, obedient subjects to the state. And so that's what they did. The sooner they could get them away from their parents. And that is where, and there's a lot of things that came from the Prussian model. I gave you the example of the truant officer. And then there's also the example of grades, the different grades and separating by age. And there's a lot of things came out of that. But the idea of kindergarten came from Prussia. That's a European thing or a Prussian thing. It's actually kinder is the German word for child. and it's Garten, G-A-R-T-E-N. But it's the idea that of a child garden, that children are grown in a garden. That's where kindergarten comes from. And so let's separate these children as early as we can from their parents. And we, just like growing rows of beans or corn or tomatoes or whatever it is you think about in the garden, they start producing children this way. Start them all together from a seed or a sprout. Sow them all together. Feed them all the same fertilizer. Weed them all the same way at the same time. And harvest them all at once. They start them in a garden and they raise them up. And you got to keep in mind, the Prussian model was not for the benefit of the child. It was to take these children away from their parents as soon as possible and raise them for the benefit of the state. That was the thinking and the reason behind the Prussian model. I'm going to read from a book, and it said this about the Prussian model. It said, and the book name of the book is Dependent on D.C., but it said this. It said, Prussian policymakers had learned by experimentation that it was easier to apply behavior-shaping techniques to children who knew very little and were only modestly literate than it was to shape those young people who had been trained early in thinking techniques. And so they learned that if they could get the children away before they learned to read and before they learned any critical thinking skills, that it was easier to shape those young people than it was a young person that had already learned to read and was already developing thoughts and opinions about things on their own. But boy, if we can get them away young, and we can train them and raise them the way we want to. And you think about that. Now, I have thought a whole lot about this since I've been studying this, just on a personal note. The more I study about this, the more I realize, and I told my wife this just a couple of weeks ago, I said, I am so thankful that I did not go to kindergarten. When I went to kindergarten, and my birthday is on the line, right at the deadline of what year you move up and stay back and all like that. But I remember when I was little and my mom took me to school, I was supposed to go into kindergarten. And what we found out when we got down there is what I was old enough already to go into the first grade. And my cousin that we'd went with, he went into kindergarten and I went into the first grade. And, you know, at that time I was sort of upset about that. I missed out on the nap time and all the blocks and cubby holes, and I just remember, you know, they had mats they would take naps on, and the teachers would read to them, and they had all kinds of games, and I mean, it was just a big fun time. And that's where I was for, you know, 30 minutes or so, and then they came and pulled me out and put me behind a desk, and it had the ABCs all around the wall, and it was just a totally different setting. And I sort of held that against them for about 12 years that I'd missed out on that. But I look back at it now. I could already read. I'd spent an extra year at home with my mom. I could already read well. I had that extra time at home with my mom. And so I'm thankful for that. By the time I went to school and was put into the first grade, I was already developing as an independent person. And so I missed that. But now I look back, I really didn't miss anything. I already knew how to read. But they realize, you know, it's easier to formulate somebody's mind and thinking and upbringing if you can get them when they cannot read. And the younger they are, and separate them from their parents, you can grow that child just like you grow something in a garden. The state realizes that. This is one of the reasons why in our country over the years there's been such a backlash against homeschools, private schools, charter schools, Montessori schools. This is why the teachers union, they do not want anybody to have vouchers, school choice, all of these things. To get it is a fight against that because they lose control. The government loses control. Well, the book goes on and it talks about a gentleman named Froebel. He's the one that come up with this Prussian model. Froebel's kindergarten, with its early removal of the child's parents and culture from the scene and its replacement of serious learning with songs, games, pictures, and organized group activities, was remarkably effective in delivering compliant material to the state. And so when they took the children at an early age and they replaced serious learning with the songs, games, pictures, and organized group and all of that stuff, and, you know, that's just exactly the way it is today. You have this going to school and a lot of playing and a lot of all of this stuff going on. A lot of playing, a lot of activity. They ought to be there to learn. Well, what's wrong with that? Some people would ask. Well, I don't see anything wrong with that. Kindergarten's a great thing and all like this. If we look back historically, what's wrong with that? If you look at the Prussian model, in less than 100 years from when Horace Mann went over there and he came back to America and instituted it in our schools. But if you look what happened to Russia, what happened in Russia in less than 100 years, the children, the grandchildren of that Prussian model would follow a man named Hitler. Now, when Germany followed Hitler, Germany was one of the most educated, Germany was not a country of ignoramuses. Many of these people were highly educated, but they had been educated in that Prussian model. And the people of this nation followed Hitler. And the people of this nation that had been brought up with this in this environment were compliant. Can you imagine that? Hitler didn't go out and kill all those people one by one, 6 million Jews, millions of other Polish people and Italians and all the different neighbors round about and handicapped people. And they murdered all. Hitler didn't go do that by himself. The people of Germany at that time, they did the work. They just did what they were told to do. They were compliant. That is what's wrong with an educational system that is put in place for the benefit of the state, not the child. Psalms 11:3 says, if the foundations be destroyed, what can the righteous do? And Proverbs 22, verse number 6 says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Do you know that works both ways? If you train up a child in the way he should not go, then when he is old, he's probably not going to depart from that. Truth, righteousness, goodness, godliness, all of these things are so very, very important when we think about the education of our children. Well, we're just taking some sort of a stroll through history and learning some things. Why is it the way that it is? History shines a lot of light on why things are the way they are today. Well, I appreciate you very much listening in to the Blessings of Liberty radio broadcast. I hope you have a great day. Here we are, end of March, or end of February, beginning of March, and spring is on the way, and we've got a lot to be thankful for. We're always thankful for that. Let's pray together for our nation, our country, and our leaders. The Bible says that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and honesty. Noah's going to come and give her contact information. You have a great day, and God bless.
You've been listening to Blessings of Liberty, brought to you by Pastor Wayne Greer, the Mount Lebanon Baptist Church. It's located in Vilas, North Carolina. If you'd like to contact us, you can reach us through our church phone number at 828-963-4596. That's 828-963-4596. Or you can reach us through our church website at mountlebanonbc.org. That's MTLEBANONBC.org. www.amsix90wzu.org.